Welcome back to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and live broadcast on the internet at www.kpft.org. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. With us now, live over the phone, is Roger Normand. Mr. Normand is co-founder and executive director of the Center for Economic and Social Rights, where he oversees policy, program, and outreach, and directs projects in the Middle East and Central Asia. He is an adjunct professor at the Columbia School of International and Public Affairs. In 1991, he helped organize the International Study Team missions to Iraq, the first independent investigations of the impact of war and sanctions on Iraq's civilian population. In 1988 to 90, he worked with Catholic Relief Services and Human Rights Watch Asia on human rights and refugee issues in Southeast Asia. A graduate of Harvard Law School and Harvard Divinity School, he has written on human rights and refugee issues for a wide range of publications. In recent years, Mr. Normand has led human rights fact-finding missions to Iraq, Israel, Palestine, and Afghanistan. Mr. Normand, welcome back to Arab Voices.
Well, thank you for having me on again.
Thank you. Please give us your reaction to what the whole world has seen on TV over the past few days. And we are told, and I will quote one thing you said last week, recent revelations about mistreatment at Abu Ghraib prison are only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to U.S. war crimes in Iraq. Tell us more about that, please.
Well, I think, you know, they say a picture is worth a thousand words, and, you know, we in the human rights community have known for a long time, for months, as the Pentagon has also known for a long time, that terrible abuses were happening in detention centers throughout Iraq, and not only in Iraq, in Afghanistan and Guantanamo Bay and many places where the under the rubric of this war on terrorism. And it's not until the pictures were about to be made public that the Pentagon started talking about these terrible abuses. But I think the point I was trying to make is that, you know, torture is one of the worst violations of human dignity that can be imagined. But there is it's symptomatic of a much larger problem of U.S. policy in Iraq, and that is the problem of the occupation itself, which is in contradiction to the desire of the Iraqi people for independence and self-determination. And unless we address that issue, it won't be good enough simply to even address the torture issue in its full component, let alone the way the administration seems to be trying to address it, which is to pin it on a few low-level bad apples, which is clearly insufficient.
How much worse do you think the situation is then? Mark mentioned, summarized earlier in the news segment, about some of the reaction that we've heard today from some of the senators on Capitol Hill after they viewed 1,200 pictures. That was done, of course, in closed rooms. And if I may ask Mark, if you can just quote one or two of those quotes. And those are coming from senators on Capitol Hill.
Well, one of the things that struck me is that the reaction seems to be that it's better for everybody in the U.S. that these pictures are not seen. That seems to be the kind of overwhelming reaction of those who have seen them. A couple of quotes. Senator Richard Durbin said that there were some awful scenes, and he said it felt like you were descending into one of the wings of hell, and sadly it was our own creation. Jane Harmon said it was cruel and sadistic torture, and Ron Wyden said it take the worst case and multiply it several times over. That's just a sample of some of the things that were said today.
Now, with those comments, obviously the 1,200 pictures, and supposedly there is video. I've heard the report, I have not seen it yet, that CBS was even airing that video tonight on their show that already passed, the CBS 60 Minutes 2. Would that complicate more and further the relations between the U.S. and the Arab at large, the entire Middle East, and how much worse will it get over there? Where do we go from here?
Well, I think, you know, there's a huge underlying problem with the whole premise of keeping these things out of the public domain. I mean, on the one hand, it's, you know, sometimes awful pictures, you know, you want to protect people from seeing awful abuse, but in this case, it's very counterproductive, because really what seems to be the Bush administration's purpose is so that the American people don't know the full extent of what's going on. And I think it's a damage control issue, and it means that you won't solve the underlying policy problems. And so I think that's really the worst part about the motivation for keeping all of this secret still.
Now, you mentioned earlier, I think you were going to comment more about the whole situation of occupation of Iraq and what's happening there. And I guess in this case, it just happened that somebody got a hold of the pictures. And we know this didn't happen last week or the week before. Apparently, they've been going on for months. There have been official reports by the Red Cross and other officials to the U.S. government and to the British government of abuses in the prison. And they completely, basically ignored them, did not want any of that to go out. And who knows what's happening in Afghanistan? Who knows what's happening in Guantanamo
Bay?
This
is the problem. The problem is that the policy is one of deception.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that has been characterizing the Bush administration approach to Iraq and other places from the beginning. So that's why I'm saying within the human rights community, the Red Cross, complaints were made. You know, the Pentagon officials were told what was going on. It was known. It was known for a long time, and there has been an attempt to cover it up. And now that it could no longer be covered up, there's an attempt to pin it just on some low-level, soldiers, you know, 21-year-old, you know, young people who clearly are not responsible for policies. And there's an attempt to still shield the full impact of what's been going on there. And one thing that the Red Cross and others have said is that Abu Ghraib is not the worst of it, that there are other detention centers throughout Iraq where worse things were going on, and we're literally talking about rape and murder as well as torture. So it's, you know, at one level, you might say, well, it's shocking that Americans who are supposed to believe in rights and our army would do this. But I think that the issue is this. Occupation is only possible when you humiliate and dehumanize people. People don't want to be occupied. And so if the American army is occupying a country like Iraq against the will of many Iraqis, it's inevitable that you're going to end in abuse. Torture is the logical endpoint of the U.S. policy. And that's why the point that I think is really important is for us not simply to try and solve the torture problem, not simply to say give the Red Cross and others access and to make sure that there are rights in these detention centers, but to have a hard look at the entire policy of occupation, which is wrong.
Well, just to make things clear, I mean, I've heard several comments from some of the right-wing media people, like the strongest example that sticks out in my mind is Rush Limbaugh, who was comparing these pictures to fraternity pranks. And it was kind of disgusting to hear that reference because, you know, we haven't seen the worst of them, that's true, but even the ones that we have seen are pretty disgusting. What do you make of the coverage of this? You said the administration is trying to, you know, hold it back, and even the senators who've seen the pictures say we shouldn't see them. How do you think it's being covered in the media at large in the U.S. generally?
Well, I think the media coverage of the entire war has been problematic, and all you have to do is compare the coverage in the United States to the coverage not just in the Arab world, but in Europe, and you have completely different pictures. And I think this is one of the reasons why what's developing is something very dangerous. It's almost a split between the perception that Americans have of ourselves, that we're fighting for democracy and liberation, and the perception that the overwhelming majority of the rest of the world has, which is that this is a war for empire, for greed, for money, and for control. And that's something that in the long run is going to do enormous damage to America's standing in the world, and already has done. And so the other problem is that people's understanding of what goes on in Iraq, for example, Americans' understanding, is largely through the media. I mean, there are two main sources where people will get their information. That is from our government and from our media. And the purpose of media is also to be able to hold government accountable when it does things wrong. But what we've seen in the U.S. media, I'm not talking about the alternative media now, but the mainstream media that most Americans, you know, get their information from, has been to whitewash or to downplay these problems. And that's why when surveys are done of American understanding of the rest of the world, but particularly Iraq, you see so many things that are simply factually wrong. I mean, many Americans still believe Iraq was responsible for 9/11, still believe there were close ties between the Saddam Hussein's regime and al-Qaeda, things that the rest of the world knows to be false. Why is it that Americans have all these wrong ideas about what goes on there? It's not because we're born with that information. We are given false information by our government and our media. And until the information problem is solved, it's hard. You know, this is a problem of democracy. How can we then have the correct policies? How can we hold our leaders accountable when many Americans don't even know what's going on? Not only that, think they know what's going on, but it turns out that their information is simply wrong.
Okay, our phone switch is lit up. All lines are occupied right now with listeners on hold. Want to talk to or ask questions of our guest tonight, who is Roger Normand, the Executive Director for the Center for Economic and Social Rights. I want to remind you of the phone number again, although all lines are full, but that's 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. If you call us and you get a busy signal, please call again. And I want to ask all the callers on hold, once you ask your question or you make your comment, we're going to disconnect the line to open it for other callers and give as many callers an opportunity to ask questions. And you're listening to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston.
And I'm also going to ask the callers to keep their questions and comments brief, because we've got people piled up all over. The lines are all full.
All right, let's go ahead and give them the opportunity to ask questions or make comments. Let's go first to Mike. Mike, you're on there.
Yes, good evening. Good evening, Mr. Normand. Good evening, Saeed. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Question is, Mr. Normand, I talked to a World War II veteran not too long ago, and he was telling me that he is appalled by the way the U.S. military is acting today. He says that the German POWs in World War II got treated 10 times better than compared to the way we're treating our POWs in Iraq. And I think it's a problem of upbringing. The boys of World War II were raised totally different compared to the generation we're raising now, and guys my age and a little younger. And my second question is, this has to do with the media. I think they're underreporting the number of dead GIs. I've heard many European sources and other Arab sources where there's at least 3,000 dead GIs in Iraq. And if you would, go ahead and comment on those two issues.
Thank you for your call.
Sure.
Well, on the first issue, it's hard for me to say, you know, the difference in the upbringing of the two generations. I do think that there is an element of racism going on in terms of the treatment of Iraqis. I think that, and this again gets to the media image, I think in World War II, you know, and to some extent I think this did happen with the Japanese, and you look at what happened to Japanese Americans in this country, which did not happen to German Americans and others. I mean, I think that we still, you know, view Europeans as, you know, however you want to say it, more culturally close, whereas Japanese, there's a lot of racism. Clearly, there's a huge amount of anti-Arab racism, unfortunately, right now in the United States. And I think a lot of that is coming from messages from the top, from our government. And so if you get a message of essentially impunity, you can treat these people, you know, in any way you want, and you're a young soldier and you're in Iraq, and the fact is you don't want to be there. I mean, I think many people who fought in World War II really felt it was a just cause and had a reason for being there. I don't think that many, you know, I mean, I don't have a survey, but I do think that the reasons for us fighting in Iraq, many people know, are just false. We were lied to. It's you know, fascism in World War II was a grave danger to the world. Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi regime, we now know for certain, posed no threat except really to their own people and perhaps their neighbors. So you had false reasons, you had racism. Clearly there are kind of chain of command problems where the message of humane treatment has not been getting down. And you put all that together and you end up with the awful things that we're seeing. And I think, I'm sure it is disgraceful to many people in the professional military. And I also want to point out that there is a big developing split within the military. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, long-time servicemen and generals and high-ranking people in our military who feel, you know, who feel that what's happened is disgraceful and blame the civilian leadership, blame Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and the civilians at the top of the Pentagon for essentially dragging our military into something, into a place they shouldn't be. And that's coming out. I mean, I think part of the reason why this whole thing has become an issue is that there were elements in the military that went and they did a report and they reported that what's happening is absolutely wrong. And there were other elements, especially the military intelligence, which is more answerable to these the civilian leadership who is behind a lot of this. So that's one thing I think that's going on there. And I'm sorry, the second question, if I could be reminded of the
second. I think he was asking about that he has heard or read reports of possibly up to 3,000 GIs may have been killed in Iraq or something like
that. Yeah, I've heard similar things. I don't know those figures, but I've heard that deaths are being underreported. I know that for a long time suicides were happening and were being denied and underreported. I also think that deaths, from what I understand, deaths of what are these kind of private contractors who in some ways are mercenaries are not being included in the official statistics, and that this private army force is actually the second largest force in Iraq. There are more of these, you know, paid mercenaries than there are British soldiers, and they're involved in combat as well as in the interrogation, but they are totally unaccountable. And so I would imagine that deaths among, you know, unless it's a big media event, those deaths are probably not reported at all to the media.
And there's a couple of Pentagon figures. The Pentagon says officially that 18,000 U.S. troops have been airlifted out of Iraq to hospitals. And they then kind of doubled back on that figure and said that actually that was 11,000 and not 18,000 because 7,000 of them had been airlifted more than once.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think that one thing we know for sure is that there have been an awful lot of lies about this war told to the American people. So if later on we find out that another thing we were lied to is the number of dead and wounded soldiers, that wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Okay, let's take more callers from our listeners. Let's go next to Ahmed, who's been on hold for a while. Ahmed, please make your question or comment short. Go ahead, please.
Yes, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Almighty Allah, Master Prophet, is the greatest. These are the days of Allah, and the worst is yet to come. Now, what we are witnessing is the true mentality of, especially the United States, but these Caucasian devils. You know, they're all involved. They all know what's going on, and that total mistreatment and inhumane treatment to sodomize.
Ahmed, I'm going to have to interrupt you for a second. I don't think we're going to tolerate language like Caucasian devils on this show. It's kind of racism we don't like.
Well,
if you can rephrase it, or if you said that by accident, that's fine, but that's not something we're going to accept here.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but this is not is a descriptive term, you know.
It sounds pretty derogatory to me, Ahmed. I don't know if anyone else would disagree with me.
It's the same. It's the same as somebody comes and says Muslims are so and so, or Christians are so and so, you know, or blacks are so and so.
Well, I understand.
Do you have a direct question?
It is in the Quran, though. But anyway,
do you have a direct question?
You need to reread the Quran, my friend. It's not in there at all.
Oh, I'm not going to debate that with you. But it's still, like I said, their actions speaks for itself, and it definitely is.
Ahmed, what's your question?
Inhumane. I didn't have a question. I had a comment.
Okay.
That was basically it. But I just wanted to say that that treatment that's being done is not near as what African, black peoples and Africans are all over the country, all over the globe. Like I say, black people in the United States suffer, you know, we suffer just as, you know, as worse. So that's why I can truly speak on it, because I know what has occurred to Afro descendants here in the United States.
Okay, let's see if our guest has any comments on that. Roger?
Well, I mean, I think that at the first level, it's absolutely true. It's the behavior is disgraceful, and everyone knows that, and I think in terms of looking at what's happening here in the United States, there is an enormous amount of institutional racism that persists. In fact, there have been some very interesting comparisons between this explosion in the growth of the U.S. prison system and cases of torture and mistreatment that have been coming up in our prison system. And it's not a coincidence that some of the, I know at least two of the guards who have been accused of brutality, you know, got their training in correctional facilities here in the United States and then were sent off to Iraq. But, of course, I agree with what the hosts have said. I mean, it's, you know, answering racism with racism is not an answer.
Exactly, definitely. And I want to reiterate that we do not tolerate these things, and we're trying to get rid of racism that already exists somewhere else in the world and everywhere else, and we do not want to get things worse, and violence is not going to resolve problems. Being anti-ethnic certain group or religion, whatever, is not going to resolve any of the issues we talk about. Let's go next to Sam. Sam, you're there.
Your operator.
Okay, we've seemed to have lost Sam. Let's move on.
Sam's not on the air at all.
Let's move on and take Tabitha. Tabitha, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you guys so much for everything, basically. Especially the way you handle the phone calls.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask Mr. Norman for his comments about something. I'm remembering Mike's phone call here. He basically hit before I did, but not exactly in the same way. I'm also hearing racism coming from our government officials, especially from George Bush. I don't think we need any reminding of what he said about, you know, there being snakes and we have to smoke out the rats and stuff like that. And I've also heard Mr. McCain on Capitol Hill refer to the decapitation of the American whose name I'm just forgetting right now. I'm so sorry.
Berg.
Yeah, it was Berg, yeah.
Yeah, Nick Berg. As exemplary of the barbarousness of the Iraqi people or something like that, that's the way it came across to me, and I found that really offensive. I think I heard two people actually saying that on Capitol Hill, Mr. McCain and somebody else in addition to him. And so I just wanted to hear anything that Mr. Norman might have to add to that or any comments.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thank you very much.
Roger?
Well, I mean, you know, I think the problem is that it's not one nation or one race who does barbaric things. It's the worst elements in all of us who do these things. And I think the problem of the occupation is it's bringing out the worst in everyone. I think we're seeing American soldiers committing all kinds of atrocities and barbaric acts. And I do think it's in the nature of the mission there that this will happen. And I think that it's this typical cycle of violence that you see in the Israeli-Palestinian situation, where extremists on both sides will kind of take advantage and commit all kinds of atrocities. I mean, there's no question that a public beheading of the type. I mean, it's awful. It's horrifying. But the kind of mass and indiscriminate attacks against civilians that the U.S. occupation forces have been committing throughout Iraq, not just the torture of individuals, is also pretty horrifying. And here's what I think I meant to say, and maybe I didn't say it clearly enough in the beginning, which is when I say that torture is the tip of the iceberg, what I mean is that there is a range of general routine standard practices and policies of U.S. forces that violate basic principles of international and human rights, torture being one of them. But We have many witnesses. I was just part of this World Tribunal on Iraq, where we looked at war crimes committed by the U.S., a range of them. We interviewed Iraqis and journalists and foreigners who'd been in Iraq who reported a very consistent pattern that when there were firefights, when U.S. soldiers were attacked in any way, they would open fire indiscriminately. We saw that in Fallujah, where Rumsfeld talked about a kind of a targeted response, that where at least 500 to 600 people were killed, maybe many more. Most of them, or at least half, according to the hospital records, women and children. So this indicates an indiscriminate use of massive firepower against civilian population, which is a violation of international law. The reason why you have thousands and thousands of people detained in Iraqi prisons is again, a well-known practice. It's been well-reported. American troops simply go into neighborhoods, do house raids, and round up every man and throw them into a detention center, regardless of guilt or innocence, regardless of if they're even suspected of anything. The Red Cross, based on interviews with the U.S. military, concluded that 70 to 90% of the detainees are completely innocent of anything, didn't even take part in resistance activities. So a lot of these people who are being hooded, stripped, humiliated, possibly tortured, are people who just happen to be in their homes who were picked up randomly by U.S. forces conducting a house raid. On top of that, there's a whole lot of illegalities concerning the economic restructuring of Iraq, the essentially the looting of Iraq to benefit these handful of U.S. corporations who just happen to be close campaign contributors to the Bush administration. So that's what I meant in terms of looking at this from a human rights and international law point of view. Torture is terrible. It's a violation. But the whole occupation has a variety of illegal practices going on. And that's why what we need to do is rethink what are American troops doing in Iraq in the first place, and should they be there?
Yes, and you are listening to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM. Our guest tonight is Roger Normand, Executive Director of the Center for Economic and Social Rights. We are discussing with him, obviously, the situation in Iraq and the mistreatment of the detainees and prisoners in Iraq by the occupation forces there. We still have time to take your calls. We're going to take a call next from Jose. After that, we're going to Greg, then Kramer, then Nabil, then Michelle or Michael. We have several other lines open. So I'm going to ask the callers to please make your questions short so we can take as many calls as we can in the remaining few minutes of the show. Okay, Jose, you're next. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay, hi. I just wanted to make a point as opposed to asking a question, and I think that I think it was Roger that just made hit the nail right on the head, and that is, one thing I've noticed in the media is that, because of the what happened to Mr. Berg, the so-called, it was pretty barbaric, but you have some of the people in the news media saying, hey, where's the outcry there? We fail to forget that that the abuse that's being carried out are being carried out against people that have been detained. These people, like you cited the Red Cross report, 60-70% of the detainees are civilians, and then they are not they haven't been convicted of any wrongdoing, and that's the main thing. And I think a lot of people fail to forget that is that these people are not convicted criminals; they are people that have been detained. They have not been given a trial or anything like that. And that's what makes this the abuse so immoral, is the fact that you have this these acts of torture against people by a group of military people that haven't even been schooled in the Geneva Convention. And so anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
All right, thanks for your
call. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's move on and take Greg. Greg, you're on there.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Okay.
Okay. I just had a comment I wanted to make. Okay, based on the beheading of the gentleman that was beheaded there in Saudi Arabia. In Iraq.
Yes.
Okay. Now, my thing is that when I look at it, I see the fact that the policy of the Arab culture per se, okay, where if a man rape a woman in a Muslim country, he is beheaded on Friday. Is that correct? Is he found guilty?
Maybe according to the Hollywood version, but not in any Arab country I've been to.
Well, like say for in Saudi Arabia, okay, the policy is the old law. If you commit a crime that's worthy of punishment, you're beheaded. Is that correct?
No, they have certain and different rules and different regulations, and I don't know them all offhand, but they do not just behead anybody who does anything.
There is a punishment in the Holy Quran, based on what I've understood. And matter of fact, what I understand in Saudi Arabia, that's one of the punishments is beheading.
In Saudi, it does happen sometimes. Yes. What's your point?
Okay, my point is
not a regular occurrence.
Okay, right. It's not okay if it's not a regular occurrence, but it is one of the occurrences. Okay, but my point is now when you look at it from that standpoint, and you see that whenever there's a crime against humanity in that standard, there's a punishment that's worthy of death. Okay, now when you put men that are Muslim in a condition where you, like these pictures that's been exposed. Some of these pictures, you have one man standing in front of another man with lewd scenes as if they're making these men have sex. It is, matter of fact, it is some indications that they say that they've been sodomized, like the person that was sodomized in New York City with a broomstick by officers.
Greg, we're running out of time, so I'm going to have to ask you to make your point very quickly.
Okay, real quickly. My point is, if these type of conditions are based on the actions that these people experience, it's like you're insulting a person to that degree. It's almost like killing him. When you make a man that is a Muslim do obscene acts and make them all naked in front of each other, that's like cutting his head off. That's a total insult. But this is the American culture, and they say in democracy. You bring in a democracy to a country, and this is the kind of democracy you want the people to accept, this filthy and indecent type activity, and you saying this, you're saving them? That's obscene.
Okay, Greg.
You know, if I can make one comment on that, I think that there's been too much made out of the Arab and Muslim culture aspect of some of those photos and the scenes we've seen. I think any religion, any culture, if any people who are subjected to that kind of degrading and humiliating treatment would feel, you know, terrorized, ashamed, humiliated, angered, if anyone listening to this could imagine being one of these people detained in your own home for no reason, stripped naked, humiliated, thrown in, tied down, made to do those kind of things, whether you were an Arab or not an Arab or Christian or Muslim or anyone, I think the basic human feeling would be the same.
And I want to say one comment here regarding the beheading of Nick Berg. I am of Arab descent, and I'm proud of it. We've never been taught ever that we can kill people. We are never taught, whether in our religion books, or whether it's Christian or Muslim. There are a lot of Arab Christians out there, or Muslims.
Including
or
one right here.
Exactly. Nobody. So what you saw on TV or on the internet, that does not represent Arab culture, that does not represent Islam, that does not represent Muslims. There are few people out there who do these acts. They do not represent a culture or a religion. Just like if somebody commits a crime in the United States, we don't say Americans are doing this or Christians are doing this or whatever that person's ethnicity is doing that. Okay, we've got just a couple of minutes. Let's see if we can take a quick one or two calls quickly. Next is Kramer. Kramer, you had a few seconds to ask a question.
Hello. I just wanted to let everyone know about an incident because a friend of mine's father was in Saudi Arabia right on the outskirts of Iraq, and he was luckily laid off from his job. Because as soon as he got back, like this was about 6 or 8 weeks ago, some terrorists walked in the building and killed only all the Americans in this building. I do not know which company he was working for, but it was never reported from what I understand on the news, and I'm not sure exactly why. And then another thing I just want to state is it's really sad that people who are not enemies of these nations are made enemies because of what side they're on. Although I'm a person who believes that the world should just get along, but it's a sad thing because I'm not a Christian or a Muslim, because I think that's a sick and disgusting way to be. But I just wanted to let people know of that incident
sick,
in Saudi
sick
Arabia,
and disgusting.
And I just wanted to say
are
I
you
am
saying
not an enemy
Kramer?
Of Iraq or Iran or whoever.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your call, Kramer. Hopefully he didn't say that he's sick or disgusted by being a Christian or a Muslim, because that is way from
It sounded to me like that's what he was trying to say. But
okay, let's take the last question quickly from Nabil. Nabil, you have a few seconds to ask a question.
Okay, well, I'll try to be quick. I wanted to bring everybody's attention that every time the American military is in problems, all of a sudden some terrorist act happens to bail them out. And this Musab al-Zarqawi fellow is from Jordan and not Iraq. Iraqis don't act like that. They're not suicide bombers. They're fighting to liberate their country from occupation. And they're getting tortured. The whole population is getting tortured in an unjust war. But this is just to bail them out. It might be that they even set it up, meaning the military or the administration.
Well, the timing is certainly questionable, because I know that Nick Berg's family have known for quite some time that he was dead, and they knew he was decapitated. So the timing of the release of the video is certainly questionable.
And he was innocent. He's not no okay. big CIA guy or nothing.
Okay.
But if you look back to the events, any time there's pressure on them, somehow some terrorist activity happens, and it only hurts Iraqis.
Okay,
in
Nabil.
In this case, it's their reputation.
Okay, Nabil, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
And Mr. Normand, few seconds, what is your last thought on what's going on?
Well, my last thought is simply this, that the most important human rights principle that, you know, is in treaties and the UN Charter, etc., is the principle of self-determination. And you cannot have self-determination under an occupation. That's true for Iraqis, it's true for Palestinians, it's true for any people. And again, I just want to repeat that there will be torture, there will be all of these inhumane acts as long as the occupation continues.
Yes.
So I think what we need to really put pressure on in terms of our own awareness and what we can tell our government is that we want American troops back.
Yes.
We want a serious and legitimate timetable for Iraqis to determine their own future without the American need to control their land, their oil, the Middle East region
yes.
as a whole.
And we are out of time. Our guest tonight has been Mr. Roger Normand, Executive Director of the Center for Economic and Social Rights. Thank you, Mr. Norman, so much for being our guest tonight.
My pleasure.
And many thanks to the volunteers tonight, Mark, Jeff, Matthew, and Ayman. You're listening to KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.